Thomas Drake, a former senior executive at the National Security Agency, is facing 10 counts of violating the Espionage Act of 1917. Mr. Drake claims that his whistleblowing didn't reveal anything that was classified when he passed information to a reporter who then published a series of stories about financial waste and dubious legal practices at the NSA. His is one of four cases the Obama administration is pursuing applying the Espionage Act of 1917. And Jane Mayer joins us now to discuss the Drake case and its implications. Her story, The Secret Sharer, appears in the May 23rd issue of The New Yorker. I'm very pleased it has brought her back to our show for today's Backstory segment. Welcome back.
Thanks so much. Glad to be with you.
Is there much of a distinction made between whistleblowing and leaking?
Well, I guess that we sort of generally think of whistleblowing having a positive connotation in letting the public know about something important that it needs to know about, and leaking just sounds, you know, sneaky somehow and wrong. I guess that's the depends what seat you're sitting in on how you look at some of these things.
What about legally?
Well, I mean, legally, what's going on right now that's surprising, and one of the reasons I was writing this story was that people will remember that when Obama ran for the presidency, he vowed to have a more open and transparent government, and he actually spoke very positively about whistleblowers, particularly those that help bring to light things that go wrong in the government. But now that he's in office, his administration's been sort of surprisingly aggressive in cracking down on leakers. And in particular, they've got now five prosecutions going on against people accused of leaking illegally. And that's more prosecutions than every other previous administration combined. So there's a really kind of a posture that's much more aggressive right now. And this case I'm looking at is one of them.
The president is a former constitutional law professor. Does that make it particularly surprising that his administration would pursue this new avenue of prosecuting these cases?
Well, it's made it disappointing to the people who think that this is the wrong thing to do, for sure. There are a number of people I interviewed who sort of expected a very different attitude from Obama. But what I try to explain and is a little bit about where Obama's coming from on some of this, too, from what I've been able to piece together. We have to keep in mind he is commander-in-chief and was at the same time that these cases are going on trying to keep complete secrecy in such things as the raid on Osama bin Laden's compound. And so he sees some of these national security leaks particularly as issues of trying to protect American lives. I think a lot of people who know this particular case think the administration didn't understand the details here, and that Thomas Drake, the man at the center of it was really trying to tell the country about important things that it needed to know about.
At least two people you spoke to said that the president was either misinformed or co-opted by the intelligence community about these cases. But do you also have a sense that WikiLeaks has played a role in all of this and all of the uproar about that?
I think you're absolutely right to bring that up. I mean, I think the administration's been just bedeviled by WikiLeaks, and I think Obama in particular, if you read widely about him, the flip side of no drama Obama is that he likes control and really doesn't like, he looks at leaks as disloyal in some ways, and so in the campaign he hated them, and in the White House he hates them. I mean, they really don't like this. But
well, is there a president that ever liked leaks?
No, there's not. All administrations hate them because it steals the initiative from them and sometimes reveals very embarrassing things. But what's important to keep in mind, at least from my standpoint as a reporter, is that much of what comes out that in leaks is embarrassing to the government, but that's not illegal in this country.
Well, let's talk about the Thomas Drake case. It starts with a decision made by the then head of the National Security Agency, Michael Hayden, about a year before September 11, 2001. Why did he decide to fund something called Trailblazer rather than another program called Thin Thread?
Well, I mean, what happens inside the National Security Agency, first of all, happens behind the heaviest black curtains in America. It's the most secretive part of the U.S. government, so it's hard to know all the answers to these things. But there was some suspicion that the NSA decided to sign up a program that involved giving tons of money to private contractors, some of whose officials were also moving back and forth to the top rungs of the NSA. There was kind of a revolving door going on. By the time this program was over in 2006, it had wasted $1.8 billion and amounted to nothing. It's considered a huge flop and kind of a big secret flop. And this is one of the things that Drake was upset about and trying to bring to light.
But he also was a supporter of Thin Thread. I'm fascinated by these names, Thin Thread, Trailblazer.
Yeah, isn't it something? I guess these programs are so complicated that it maybe gives people a handle on how to discuss them by giving them a simple name.
You spoke to Bill Binney, the man who developed Thin Thread. Does he think that it could have been picked up on that it could have picked up on the planning for 9/11, the attack?
Well, he does. I mean, of course, Bill Binney is this remarkable mathematician who all these people, the story's based on interviews with people who came forward finally for the first time and spoke on the record about their what was going on behind the scenes. And Bill Binney was a mathematician who helped invent this program, Thin Thread, which is just incredibly powerful data mining program that, as he put it, he comes forward and apologizes to the American public. It allows the government to, as he put it, spy on the entire world, and it incorporates everything from everybody's emails to their travel records to their financial records, anything that is available in the way of data.
So the government knows about the junk mail I received this morning.
Well,
what would they do with it?
Bill Binney
I deleted
this, and he's somebody who I think may be in a position to know more about it, certainly than most people. What he says is that since 9/11, and this was one of the things that was so eye-opening to me, but he believes that since 9/11, the American government's had the capacity to copy every email sent by every American and keep copies of it and store it. And they don't read them unless they need to read them. And in order to read them legally, they'd have to get a warrant. But they're there.
But there were safeguards against domestic spying in the original program. What happened?
Well, that's what's upset these people. And that is the backbone of this story is there was a small group of dissidents within the NSA who were involved in these programs who realized that the United States government after 9/11 stopped protecting the privacy of Americans and took off all kinds of automatic privacies that these people had built in. And started doing warrantless surveillance of Americans when they thought that they might be connected to terrorism.
And what happened when they talked about their concerns? What did Hayden say?
Well, Hayden basically said that he believed the program was legal because he believed that the president had the right as commander-in-chief to do this. And he also said that he told these people, he told one of them in particular, to keep it secret.
He was pretty much what Dick Cheney was saying, that the president could do whatever he wants because of executive privilege, executive powers.
Yes, and he actually, in this remarkable exchange, there's a showdown that took place with one of the people in this story. Hayden said that he believed and had been assured that the majority of the Supreme Court was on his side. Now, I don't know, and I've been unable to find out, why the director of the National Security Agency thought the Supreme Court would be on his side, since it never formally reached the Supreme Court. I don't know if there was a back channel or if he was just, ad-libbing, but that was fascinating.
Well, let's get back to Thomas Drake. Why did he eventually decide to go to Siobhan Gorman, a reporter at the Baltimore Sun, beyond the fact that he chose the Baltimore Sun rather than the New York Times or the Washington Post? Why go to any reporter?
Well, if his story is, and he will be on trial for espionage in on June 13th. But his side of the story is he went through all the channels that existed, all the proper channels, trying to inform Congress where the oversight committee was supposed to pay attention to this, trying to inform Inspector General at the Pentagon, and that there actually was a multi-year investigation done that found in his favor, but the results were classified, so no one could find out. And meanwhile, he was sitting there watching as the Bush administration, he felt, was, as he put it, lying through its teeth about this surveillance program. And it I guess he felt that the public needed to know.
But what about the classification aspect of this? He claimed it was not classified information.
Well, he does. I mean, and the fine point of the charges against him is that he took five classified documents home. He says three of them were just accidentally in his basement. They were part of this long-running Inspector General's report that he helped support. And two others were in his email, and they're very minor documents. I think you can see that one of them's been declassified since he's been charged. Since the point when he was charged with it being a major felony, the government said, "Oh well, after all, it's actually not classified." The other one is something that was never classified in the first place, but which the government says should have been. So he's facing this incredibly powerful, grave charges on the basis of documents that put it this way, they are not, it's not the Manhattan Project we're talking about here.
But even if they were, hadn't other government officials taken stuff home and not been punished for it? I'm thinking about Sandy Berger, for example.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's an irony, because Sandy Berger, who was the National Security Advisor during the Clinton years, spirited out, or is charged with having spirited out some classified documents in his pant legs. And his lawyer at the time, the defense lawyer, was the head of the criminal division now, Lanny Brewer, who was leading the prosecution into Drake. So in the case of Sandy Berger, it was considered a misdemeanor. In the case of Thomas Drake, it's considered a major act of espionage. Of course, every case is different, and there is the problem of the appearance of a lack of kind of equality in prosecution.
Well, I would assume that this has also been connected to the other major story that blew up in the face of the government, James Reason and Eric Lichtblau, revealing that the NSA had been engaging in domestic warrantless wiretapping program.
Well, this is you're right, and I mean, and it's hard to make the, all I can tell you is this is a heck of a saga, and you have to kind of start in the beginning. But basically, the reason I think it's pretty clear that Tom Drake is facing these grave charges in court is that during the Bush years, the Justice Department tried to find the leak in the case of that explosive New York Times story. Bush was furious that story came out, and so was the NSA. And they put all of these prosecutors and investigators on it, and they could never get to the bottom of it. And instead, what they wound up with was the best they could do was find what they think was a leaker on another story to another paper, the Baltimore Sun, a much less explosive story, much less sensitive material, but it's all they could come up with. And so they wound up with Thomas Drake.
Well, how did they find Thomas Drake? Did he blow his own cover?
Well, sort of. I mean, basically they came across him while they were looking for the Ryzen leaker. And when they got to Drake, he said, "Well, no, I never talked to the New York Times. That's not me. But I did talk to the Baltimore Sun, but not about anything classified." And he then went on to tell the government all about what he thought was the wrongdoing by the NSA, both the constitutional problems presented by the surveillance and the waste, fraud, and abuse by this huge sort of boondoggle spending. And the prosecutors and investigators were not interested in that. They were looking for leakers. And since he said he talked to the Baltimore Sun, they wound up charging him.
I'm talking with Jane Mayer, whose article, The Secret Share, appears in the May 23rd issue of The New Yorker. In May, on the day that Michael Hayden had his first day of confirmation hearings to head the CIA, The Sun published a story about Thin Thread and whether it was being used to invade Americans' privacy. How did Hayden respond to questions about it that day?
Well,
that was May 2006, of course.
Yes, this was back a ways. Well, this goes to yes, that the story that in the Baltimore Sun on Thin Thread came out just as Hayden was about to was trying to get confirmed to run the CIA, and he was eventually confirmed. But it was embarrassing. It was that he was having to face tough questions on how he authorized these programs at the NSA, right at the moment when he probably didn't want those kinds of questions. And he made a few comments about how he thought people in the spy world shouldn't have to justify their decisions in the front pages of the newspapers. So you can see that the kinds of material that Tom Drake was involved in talking to the Baltimore Sun about resulted in embarrassment to top people in our government. And, Michael Hayden, who's a retired now from the government, only gave me sort of a few comments on questions. I didn't get his full point of view, but it seems possible that he was mad and embarrassed.
Drake wasn't the only one who was concerned by the cost overruns of the Trailblazer program. What happened to the others who were frustrated by the way Hayden was dealing with it?
Say that again. Which ones are you thinking of?
Well, there were a number of people who thought that Hayden had made the wrong decision in going with Trailblazer.
Oh, the other people who were friends of... There were a number of people who were working with Drake to try to get this information out, or to try to basically... I mean, what they felt was important most is protecting the national security of the United States.
You point out they were all registered Republicans.
They're Republicans. They're defense hawks. And they felt that the decisions being made at the top rungs of the NSA to choose a program that was a boondoggle from their standpoint and didn't work, and really in the end everyone agrees it didn't work, it was a flop. Going in that direction, they feared, and not choosing a program that actually did work or could have worked, and it worked in trials, exposed the United States to more danger. And so there were a number of people who were on Drake's side in this, and they were the inventors of this other program and champions of this other program.
But they have not been punished.
Well, they actually were all raided by armed FBI agents in their homes. It was kind of an amazing picture that you get of what it's like to be on the other side of the law in terms of this national security kind of situation. One man was in the shower and was facing a FBI agent with a gun between his eyes. A few seconds later, one woman was asleep in her house in Oregon, and the FBI shaking the door down practically. And another fellow had to sit there while his mother-in-law was in her bathrobe and his teenage daughter was there sort of weeping on the sofa while his house was raided. It's quite an incredible story behind this thing. So to me, it was very eye-opening.
Well, in your article, you describe Drake as obsessive, dramatic, and emotional, and as having an unwavering belief in his own rectitude. Do you think that his personality is the reason that ultimately led him to be the only one to be charged in this case, although, as we point out, there are four other similar cases that are also being prosecuted?
Well, I think in many ways he's a classic whistleblower type, which if you're a reporter, you come across someone who is almost willing to risk their own neck they see this kind of truth telling thing as almost a matter of civil disobedience. They just can't repress it, and I think he's irrepressible and just felt he had to speak up.
Well, the stories that Drake provided information for, and even the New York Times story, hardly the only published reports relying on what the government calls classified information. The Justice Department recently announced that it wouldn't pursue prosecuting Thomas Tam, who revealed that he was one of the sources for the New York Times story. Does that have any impact on the Drake case? And why this inconsistency?
It sharpens the irony. I think the thing is that Thomas Tam, who, as you say, revealed himself to be one of the sources to the New York Times, was a lawyer in the Justice Department, and as a lawyer, I think he was very smart about where to draw the line and how not to get himself in legal trouble. That said, his life was hell for a couple of years while he was being investigated. Drake is not a lawyer, and there was an email trail going back and forth between him and a reporter, and that made it a lot easier to prosecute him.
What does this mean for reporters?
Well, this is one of the reasons I thought it was worth writing about this story. Is they're great and important ramifications surrounding this case. The thing is, Drake is being prosecuted as a spy under the Espionage Act just for retaining defense material that was unauthorized in his house, taking home some documents, or having them in his email. And the problem for reporters is many, many reporters have unauthorized defense material in their files, in their notebooks, maybe in their email, and maybe, you know, in their houses. Because when you write about these subjects, so much is overclassified. You're likely to come across something that's classified, and if you can be prosecuted under the Espionage Act for that, it means reporters are in jeopardy of being prosecuted as spies.
What about you, Jane?
I refuse to answer that question.
Under the grounds that it might incriminate you.
That's for sure.
But we do have a link to your article on our show page at WNYC.org. And the article is The Secret Sharer, which appears in the May 23rd issue of The New Yorker. There's a lot of fascinating detail that we couldn't get to. But it's been fascinating talking to you about the case. Thank you so much, Jane.
Thanks for having me.